Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement. This is our seventh episode. My name is Fredrik Weidland, and with me I have the leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simon Lindberg. Hello.
Hello, hello, Fredrik and all listeners. I use a new computer with new software. It should be a bit more secure, so I hope it is so. But I also even more hope that the sound quality is as good as usual. And if not, now you know why, and then we will fix it. But hopefully it is okay.
Yeah, and yes, we will have some time to fix it, because after this episode we are going on a summer holiday. Is that right?
Yes, there is other things that are on the agenda for the summer. The struggle is more than podcasts. We are not just a podcast organization, so to say, as you all know. So we have a lot of other things that needs to be taken care of, and therefore we need to have a pause from the podcasting for a while. But it will not be forever, of course. What date did we have when we said we will be back?
2nd of September.
Yes, so it is two episodes now that we will take a break from in July and in August. However, I also would like to say that, as our frequent listeners know, our shows are divided into three parts, you could say. They used to start with an introduction by Fredrik Weidland, often where you are commenting something recent regarding our struggle. The second part is a report by me of what has happened in the Nordic struggle since last episode. And then the last part is an ideological and tactical question. And this last part, I will just want to say that this last part is very, very timeless and could most certainly be listened to in 10 years from now and being as actual as it was when it was recorded. So with that being said, if you do miss us during our break, if you do want to have more during the break, feel free to listen to the old episodes, or at least listen to them and fast forward to the ideological and tactical question and listen to this part of the earlier episodes. Either if you haven't heard them before or as a reminder. In previous episodes, we have talked about what National Socialism is, about race, about the Jewish question, about revolution, and about the Nordic Resistance Movement and what we do and so on. So just dig into that and, please comment and send feedback to us also on the older episodes if you listen to them. That was what I wanted to say.
Yeah, very good. Should we get started with the program?
Absolutely.
Yes, so today I want to talk some tactics. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I want to say that the Nordic Resistance Movement is in the spotlight of the system here in the North. We are targeted. We have special state-founded groups using the law to stop our journalist work. We have the police trying to stop our big demonstrations. There are discussions banning us. We are banned in Finland. We have the banks not giving us bank accounts, which is illegal from their part. So that happens in Sweden and so forth. And I've been around long enough to say that this isn't usual business. This is not the ordinary repression from the system. And they, the deep state or whatever you want to call it, the Jews, they have a plan to destroy us, our organization. And it's more or less stated publicly. So this started a few years ago and differ a lot from what others are going through and what we have been through before as an organization. And the reason for all this is that we have reached a point in our development that they now fear that we will be a serious threat to the system in the future. This is also more or less stated publicly. And I'm not saying this to brag about the movement. I'm saying this because it's facts. And I can also say that they have not succeeded and they will not succeed. And this is because we are fanatics. We have a strong belief in National Socialism. And that means that even though we are striving for victory, we live and enjoy also the struggle. Some of you listeners who are not members of the Nordic Resistance Movement are already or will eventually be in a similar situation as we are. You will also reach the point of no return. And one thing you must do is to build a strong spiritual foundation. Embrace National Socialism. We have seen the benefits to our organization by doing this. When your organization is temporarily weak, and even when your leadership is temporarily weak, National Socialism will unify your members and get the struggle going. Trust me, I've seen this before. So a spiritual foundation is very important. Bind your members to a higher belief. And one more thing, you have to be able to change tactics and adapt to the situation. And you have to be an organization that can do this and also can change back when needed. So for the moment, the system makes it harder for us to have big demonstrations. Well, we are still going to have them, but you can for some time have more focus on many square meetings or blixt demonstrations, just showing up and not seeking permits. You can do more spectacular actions with more planning and few people executing the action. You can do action by night instead of the day and so forth. Or you can do all this at the same time. That will surely confuse the system lackeys and preventing them from building a strategy, a good strategy to combat you. So, yeah, that was a bit of what I wanted to say. And I hope some of my advice will help others in the struggle. And always remember, when you are targeted like this, you know that you are on the right path. And when you are on the right path, you must continue the struggle.
Good. It was your best introduction so far in Leadership Perspective, I must say. It was very wise words. And we live how you learn, we live how we learn. This is the way we are trying to run the Nordic Resistance Movement. We are trying to be always flexible and changeable, and so the system, they should never know where we're at. We must always fight to be able to surprise them, and we often do so, actually. But it is a ongoing struggle all the time against the system to be able to surprise them. And also, it is a struggle where we need to stay under the radar and need to continuously find new ways of communication and so on, because they are monitoring us. So to be able to surprise them, to be able to not let them spoil our plans, we need to be on the front of technical advancement and so on. Then we have very good IT guys and so on. And this is also part of, in the beginning, why I said I had new, more secure computer. So I got... Yeah. So, yeah, but definitely you are right. And National Socialism, as we have talked about here before, is the glue to the foundation. It is what must be in the core of the organization for it to be able to survive also the harder times.
Yeah, that was very well put. And you have also been around long enough to see when our organization has crumbled, has been weak or temporarily weak, that National Socialism has been the glue to keep it all together. in that time. Mm. So.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it was Joseph Goebbels that said that Jewish slanders are like medals on your chest. And I would say it's about the same thing with repression from the system. It is, as you say, an evidence of that they fear us, that we are growing. And sometimes, actually, I think the system believes in us more than our own sympathizers do. Of course, I believe for 100% that we will see victory one day. But people that are not members, but merely sympathizers, they do not always have the same belief in us. They can be more defeatist or so on. But the system definitely believes in us.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
Yes. Very good. Then we continue to the next section, and that is about what has happened in the struggle since last time. And then now we speak about the time between the second week in May and to the beginning of June.
Yes, during this time there has been conducted almost 200 activities containing all the usual internal and external activism, spreading of propaganda and strengthening of our members as individuals or as a group. And among the smaller things that is still worthy of mention, at least not talk so much about, but worthy of mention, is that we celebrated the EU Day with the flag burnings and activism against the globalist project EU. There has been stickers put up on Greenland, which is quite interesting, and a street patrol in a part of the city of Ludvika where there was a lot of burglary. So our guys decided it was time to patrol the streets to make sure that the burglaries stopped or trying to catch them with their fingers in the jar. We have also had a Farmer's Day in Swedish Nest 2, where our members have been able to help out at a farm and worked physically in good comradeship. And in the city of Helsingborg, in the southern part of Sweden, our flag was raised at a castle in the city center so that it could be seen from all over the city. A little bit bigger things then. In Denmark, there was a nationwide activism on the so-called Freedom Day on the 4th of May. And this is the day when Danes are supposed to celebrate that they broke free from National Socialist Germany. So our Danish comrades, they put up posters in several cities questioning what this so-called freedom actually have given us, with mass immigration, culture Marxism, porno, drugs, and much, 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 much more. And at the day of this so-called Freedom Day, there was also an article on the Danish site telling the readers a little bit more about the situation, since actually Denmark was very independent, even when it was occupied by Germany. Denmark still had their own regime, their own laws, and so on. So it was not much of an occupation, actually.
No, because we can actually discuss if this invasion, it was an invasion of Denmark, if it had the criteria to be an occupation. Because the ordinary life of the Danes were going on. They had the same parties that they had in the parliament and so on. So,
yes, absolutely. So, but of course, this is not something that even many Danes know of today, because it is the same propaganda in the schools and in the medias against evil Nazis as everywhere else, of course. So therefore, it's an important part to inform the people about. Then if we go on, we participated and gave speeches at two square meetings during the month. Actually, they were carried out on the same day. There was a square meeting in Härnösand to remember the murder of the young nationalist Tommy Lind. And Then there was a square meeting arranged by us in the most multiracial parts of Kungälv, where a Swedish woman was robbed and stabbed in the heart by a racial foreigner. But if we start in Härnösand, Tommy Lind, he tried to stop an African from raping a Swedish woman and was then stabbed to death by the African. And Tommy Lind, he was not a member of the resistance movement, but he was a well-known patriot. And this African, he first raped this woman, then stabbed Tommy to death, and then got on with rape again. So this is the kind of people we import to Sweden. The Nordic resistance movement, we of course wanted to have a square meeting to talk about this sick case, but also of course to honor Tommy Lind, that died a hero's death standing up for this woman. So the Nordic resistance movement applied for permission to hold a square meeting about this in Härnösand, but we didn't get the permission out of some last minute bad excuses, I would say. But a square meeting was arranged anyway, and we participated at this square meeting. Per Sjögren from the organization gave a speech in the city center, and the flowers were put down outside the apartment where Tommy was murdered, and there was a quiet minute to remember him and so on. And actually, activism to honor Tommy Lind has also been carried out in several other places in both Sweden and other countries. And among these other countries, it could be worth of mention that it has also been conducted activities for Tommy Lind in several Finnish cities by members of the Koti Vapauta movement. So, yeah, we will never forget and never forgive. But then if we back up again, as I said, also in Kungälv, we held a square meeting. And yeah, you participated and also gave a speech there, Veidland. So maybe it is best if you give the report about this specific activity.
Yeah, sure. Well, it was a nurse, a 56-year-old nurse, Anna-Lena Lernhede, who was stabbed in the heart by night by a young man. They say that the offender was 13 years old, so quite low age on him. Yes, yeah, so we went there, we hold a square meeting. I was speaking to the people living there and gave them support, because this is a small ghetto in Kungälv, and they have been robbed before and beaten. There have been some vandalism and stuff like that before, year after year. Politicians doesn't care. So we spoke to them as well. Yeah, and after the square meeting, we marched through the ghetto to show that there still are Swedes not tolerating racial violence against our women. So it was a great action, and I also live in Kungälv, so I know that there is people who has been very appreciated.
Yes, and sadly enough, also there was a struggle at the hospital for some time, but sadly enough, also Anna-Lena Lernhede died from this attack. So also regarding her, we will never forget and never forgive.
No.
Right. Yes. So these two square meetings, they were held at the same day, actually. And more than, there has been a lot of media coverage about us, more than usual, I would say. In Norway, because of the trials against Philip Manshaus, this guy that killed his adoptive sister and tried to attack a mosque. Of course, Manshaus has nothing to do with the Nordic resistance movement, but the system has desperately tried to link him to us anyway. So there has been a lot of media writings about us regarding his trial. There has also been media coverage in Norway about a book that was released about us, written by a known anti-racist, and the book is called Neo-Nazis Among Us. And this book, to summarize it, this book consists of so much lies that it would make Pinocchio or the equally big-nosed and lying scumbag George Soros to seem like honest guys if you compared.
Yeah.
And if you by any chance understand Norwegian and haven't listened to the podcast Hold Fanen Høyt, then I can recommend you to do so, because they in two episodes they have discussed this book and answered all the lies and all the strange accusations and so on. But at least it led to a lot of media coverage that as well. Many has written about this book. So, and in Denmark, there has also been media coverage around the trial. It was against an ex-member convicted, now convicted for having built bombs. Also here, they have tried to link him to us, even though it was a long time after he left us that he made these things. And of course, this kind of activity has nothing to do with us. But they really want to try to link it to us, to make it seem to the public that we are a criminal terrorist organization. Perhaps to make it easier to ban us in the future, as you talked about in your introduction.
Yeah.
In Sweden, there has also been highly media covered around a trial. So lots of trials this month and a lot of media coverage. But this trial was actually about our members. It was a trial against seven of our activists that fought back Reds on the streets in the city of Lund last year. At a public activity, around 20 leftists followed our comrades and shouted at them, and was very annoying and fretful and so on. They definitely provoked extremely much, and it was you can think about how that situation is when you are seven guys and 20 persons goes after you, follows you wherever you go, shout things to you and so on. So our comrades decided to turn around and fight back, and they did it very successfully. So now they stood charged for assault, and for this they was heavily doxed in the media that was trying to portray them as violent and evil, and that they were attacking silent and peaceful bypassers. It's always like this, by the way. Every time our members are at charge for assault, it's always silent and peaceful bypassers that has been attacked somehow.
Yeah. Some of the bypassers is Antifas. So.
Yes, exactly. Just out of a coincidence.
Yeah.
And I mean, for sure, Lund is a city infamous for its many Reds. But still, if you just look at the people that claim they got assaulted, you can see that these dirty, genderless beta males, they are not ordinary bypassers. Only anti-fascists look like this. Yeah. And I mean, it is not out of random that they carry on this insane self-hate. It is by a reason, and you can see it when you look at them. So, yeah. So I would say just looking at them tells that this was not innocent bypassers. This is definitely organized left wing.
Yeah.
Another thing worth of mention, it's not about activism maybe, but it's worth of mention, is that a pilot of our first Icelandic podcast was released. It is called Landsmen, and contain an interview in English with me conducted by the chief of the Icelandic branch of the resistance movement. So if you haven't listened to that, it is also something you're recommended to do now while we go on a summer break with Leadership Perspective. So we put the link in the description to this episode. And last but not least, I would also say to all our Russian-speaking comrades, if you have missed it out, there was a movie launched by supporters of us on VK, where they talk about our political program, Our Path. And this movie has gone quite viral. It has gotten over 100,000 views. And it's quite professional done. So if you understand Russian and have missed that out, find it and watch it. So, yeah, I think I settled there. Of course, there has been more things than this, but as usually, I have not the time to go through every activity. But the more important ones, I think I mentioned.
Yeah, I think you did. So, yes, we are going to the next section, the ideological and tactical question. So, our absolute highest political issue today is to stop mass immigration and begin the repatriation of the majority of those of foreign race from the Nordic countries. This is also the first point of our political program, Our Path. So I thought in this section we should talk a little bit more about immigration and repatriation, why it is such an important issue, and a little more detail about it all. Let's start by letting you talk a bit about the issue. What is the Nordic Resistance Movement's view on immigration and repatriation?
We want to stop the invasion, because that is really what it is about. It has gone way past immigration or even mass immigration. We are talking about a full-scale invasion that needs to be stopped as soon as possible, preferably yesterday. We are talking about a total stop where no one is allowed over our borders until we have regained control over the situation again. And to get control over the situation, we also need to repatriate most of the racially foreign people that are within the Nordic borders, as you said. And in Our Path, we are talking about repatriating every person of foreign race that came to our countries after 1975, because that was actually when political decisions and lobbyists worked to change it from a small scale controlled immigration into the start of the mass immigration. So before 1975, there weren't many people at all coming to the Nordic countries. And the ones who came, they were more closely related to us racially than the people that started to come after 1975. So we demand a total stop as soon as possible, and after that, a massive repatriation. And even if the invasion was stopped today, the repatriation is necessary, because we have too many foreigners here to just cope with the situation. For the matter of our racial survival, we must also start sending people back to where they came from. We need to repatriate as many necessary for our people's survival and freedom to be secured. That is, in short, our views on immigration and repatriation.
Yeah, but in more detail then, which ones are to be repatriated and which are allowed to remain?
This is strictly a question related to race. We do not care so much of if you have been following our laws or not. We do not care so much if you have learned to speak our languages or not, because that are not our prior political goals, to secure stability in that kind of sense. it is a question about race. People that are of Northern European race or closely descendant, they would be welcome to stay, since they do not compose a biological threat towards our people's survival. However, at the same time, you must be realistic, and you cannot be 100% autistically black or white in this question. You still have to be humane, but without compromising the uttermost important question that is the survival of our race. But what I mean is that a minor group of racial strangers, they will not be a threat towards our survival, not even if they mix up with whites. A minor group's DNA will be absorbed into the larger group without any considerable notice. So this is why we say that the few ones who came here before 1975, they practically have been a part of our land for 50 years. They would be allowed to stay, and that without any harm being done. We also write the following in our path that I would like to quote. Exceptions from the forced repatriation could be made in specific cases. For example, here there is a direct medical risk should the individual be moved. For adoptees, for interracial individuals, and those born in the Nordic countries without any kin or connection to the homeland of their ancestors. People who have significantly aided the Nordic people can be named honorary citizens and allowed to remain. Any non-Nordic people allowed to remain in the country will never constitute a large enough number to threaten the long-term survival of our people. End quote. And exactly where this limit is, how many that could be allowed to stay without making any harm to our race as a whole, that is not a set number for now. Instead, this is something we say that the future researchers and scientists, they need to calculate and answer this more exactly. But it is a question about race. It is a question about being as humane as possible, not being unnecessary evil or anything, but our race survival, that is the most important thing. So that needs to be secured.
We sometimes receive criticism from both sides regarding this, both that we are too soft on this issue and that we should send out everyone who is not 100% Nordic, and also that we are too inhumane and that we should, for example, allow those born in the Nordic countries to stay. What do you think about this?
It is definitely, if we start there, it is definitely not about inhumanity to secure our own unique race. Because how could it be humane to let your own people die? Why do not white Nordic people deserve to live according to these so-called humanists? Of course, we do understand that this could be traumatic for some to leave our country. And this is not at all about that we have anything against individuals or groups. It is about that we have to put our own race before others. And by the way, I do also believe that many of these racial strangers would be happier in their own countries with their own culture, language, and a climate that is adapted to their own race. So it is not about being humane or not. It's about wanting to see white Nordic people in the future or not. And we definitely would like to do so. When it comes to the other people, these that think we are too soft. Well, I understand what they mean. However, you need to ask yourself here what your aim is. Is your aim pure hate against other people? Then, of course, it would be logic to want to get rid of them all. Is your aim instead love for your own race and not hate against others reason other than their race? Then you also understand that this minority of racial strangers that would be allowed to stay, they wouldn't do any harm to the race as a whole, and therefore it's not necessary to repatriate. We are not driven by harming other people, but out of defending our own people from harm. We do not want to send people out of the north because it's funny or something, so therefore, we do not see any reason to do so against people if it's not a necessity. However, with most of them, it is totally necessary. Also, I believe that if you were about to send home everyone, then you get into a very hard debate about who is allowed to stay or not. If you don't have any compromises at all, I mean, what about white Nordic people that maybe have a non-Nordic forefather? What about Sami people that has inhabited the northern parts of our lands for thousands of years? What about someone with dark hair and brown eyes that has never heard of any other ancestry than the Nordic one? Here we have a much more defined and clearly set up of rules. We are uncompromisingly for our racial survival, but also without doing harm to people unnecessarily. Also, with our politics, we open up for the possibility for racial foreigners to participate in our fight at our side against the globalists and Zionists instead of making them all our enemies. We are clearly on why we can't have them here, because we need to secure our race survival, just as they in a sound world would like to secure their race survival. Our fight is global, and I definitely see that we need to stand together, separated, but together with other people of the world. And of course, this fight needs to be with the goal that they can move back to their countries, that we help them free their homelands from the globalist shackles. But also, for some people, some few people where that might not be possible, we can offer them to stay if they have proved themselves loyal to the National Socialist struggle, and as long as they are not in numbers where they endanger the survival of our race. And in a total, I believe that we have put the limit at a very, very, very sound, natural, and humane level, but without compromising our racial survival. And to repeat the quote from our path once again, any non-Nordic people allowed to remain in the country will never constitute a large enough number to threaten the long-term survival of our people, end quote.
Mm. So in the end of the day, we will secure our race with every measures.
Absolutely. But also, we will secure our race as National Socialists, as loving individuals, as higher, as better individuals. And of course, we will not put people in unnecessary harm. But still, of course, number one, we need to save our race.
Yeah. So perhaps it goes without saying, but why is the immigration issue so important that it is the first point of our path?
Yeah, because different races, they will never work alongside each other in the same borders, at least not in larger numbers. It has been showed again and again during history, and it could be seen perfectly clear in America of today, just to take one example. Either if you have different races on the same living area, either the races will mix up with each other, and then all different races will die. Instead of pure races with their own unique abilities and characteristics, culture and so on, we will get a mixed and gray mud race. But even if everyone stays segregated, even if everyone do not mix, then sooner or later there will be fights between the people, since the ultimate and final loyalty will always be to your own race. Disloyalty, the blood loyalty, is much deeper rooted than the one you have to your social class or to your interests or whatever. And this is also something that definitely could be seen in America. So both of these scenarios, no matter what one of them it will be, either if it will be race mixing or racially conflicts, both of these are a threat to the survival and freedom of our race. And that is, as said, our main question. Because if our race dies, nothing else matters. Every other political question is totally irrelevant and unimportant compared to this. However, at the same time, I must also add that immigration is not my personal favorite most interesting question. I see the high need for it. I see how important it is today. But still, it is just a question of correcting what was made wrong in the past. It is a question about healing our wounds. It is kind of a question about turning back time. And National Socialism, that is a revolutionary worldview that we have talked about before here. It is a worldview that wants to create something so much bigger, so much better, a visionary worldview. But however, for National Socialism to be able to work its magic, this question, the immigration question, must be solved first. Because with our race dead, National Socialism will be dead as well.
So Islam is not the biggest threat?
No, definitely not. Of course, there are a million reasons to stop the invasion. I mean, the immigrants that are here, they give us higher crime rates. They cost extremely much money. They create a lesser security in society. They lead to cultural clashes. They lead to that you're being stabbed in your heart because you won't give away your cell phone, and so on and so on. And all of these things are very bad for our people. It's very important questions for many people. But anyway, I would say that compared to if our race lives or dies, which is totally irreversible, it actually do not matter that much. And the same actually could be said about Islam. Of course, Islam is not a Nordic religion. It's not a Nordic culture. It's not something that we would like to have in the North. But at the same time, I must say that I would rather see our race live forever in a Muslim caliphate than for it to die out in a racially mixed Christian or atheistic state. However, of course, this is just theoretically speaking. An ethnically homogeneous Northern European nation would never adopt Islam, since it's not our culture. A culture, a religion, is a mirror of our DNA. And the problem with immigration, it's always about DNA.
Some people say, even people that acknowledge the problems with immigration, say that it's more humane and easier to work for better integration instead. What do you say about that?
I would say that it is definitely not more humane. As I said before, I believe it is very inhumane to mix up the different human races and eradicate our own people. Is it easier? A small amount of racially foreigners could most certainly, to some level, be integrated. Not to its full extent. They would still have biologically set traits and abilities that will always be the same, no matter how much they get integrated. It is just that integration could make people push these inner traits down, hide them away, and keep them hidden. However, this is not humane either, to force a person to be someone else than who they truly are. And even if I would be wrong about all of this and integration actually would work, we still strongly oppose it. Because as long as the racially foreigners speak their own languages, keep their culture and religion, it will be much easier to repatriate them to their natural homes again someday. And someday we will get there, so why make it harder than possible for the future? Also, of course, integration leads to a higher risk of interracial relationships and race mixing. So again, the enemy is not a religion or a behavior. The enemy is that, or the problem is, that our DNA is being wiped out by force or blending. We therefore do believe it is better if the Arabs speak Arabic than if they speak Swedish or Norwegian or Finnish. We believe it's better if they are Muslims than if they're Christians. We believe it is better that they keep their burqas and that they're still celebrating their Ramadans and so on. Because then they also stay with their own, and then they will also be easier to repatriate.
Another question that I know often comes up amongst our opponents is how repatriation would even be possible. What do you have to say to these?
Yeah, I would like to say, why wouldn't it be possible? If it was possible to get them here, then for sure it will be possible to get them out of here as well. I mean, some of these people traveled across the whole world to a different country with different culture and different climate. They didn't understand a word of our language when they set their foot here. Yet it was possible for them to come here. Why wouldn't it be possible the other way around as well? I would on the opposite say it would be much easier with the repatriation than the immigration. Because we want to bring them home again, to their own natural habitat, to their own people and their own culture. So how do we do it? The most humane way possible. We put them on a plane or a boat, family by family, so they are not being splintered, and then we bring them back. If they do not have a country, or if they are not welcome in their country by some reason, then we as a state will negotiate with other countries that are much more similar when it comes to race, culture, language than our nations is. And actually, an add-on is that I also believe that the problem will solve itself, at least to some extension, in time. Because when the economy gets worse, then people will move out of here by free will. When they do not get everything served on a silver plate anymore, when they have the same economical standards here as in their own country, why would they want to stay? Add to that our growth. When common people more and more in the open says that they do not want these immigrants here anymore, you have overstayed. Then I guess that would make the decision even easier.
About the last thing you said here, I think about our international listeners, if you can tell them how big the problem is in the Nordic countries. How many foreigners do we have, and do ordinary people in the Nordic countries agree with us about our views on these issues?
Yeah, maybe time for a big black pill now for people that do not already know it. But to answer the first question there, how many we have here, it's not 100% bulletproof because the statistics are shady. But I would say that we have around 5 million racial foreigners in the North today. And that is almost 20% of the whole population in the Nordic countries. Sweden is by far the worst, that has even worse numbers than this. And Iceland is the best. It's also a very, very small nation, so it could go really bad really fast there, if they just open up the borders a little. But on the more positive side again, we actually have really big support when it comes to these questions. I mean, just look how many of the people that vote for parties that they naively believe will solve the problem. You do not vote Sverigedemokraterna or Fremskrittspartiet because that you love their views on school or taxes or whatever. You vote on these parties because you want to stop mass immigration. However, I would also say that the support in these questions are even bigger than the number of votes on these parties. Because also a lot of people that vote for the pro-immigration parties do not agree on their stance on immigration. And if we look, for example, among white working class males living outside the biggest cities, I would say that we have at least 90% support when it comes to these questions. That is my firm belief. Of course, maybe not all of these supporters understand the race or Jew question and sympathize with us on that. But in the view that immigration needs to be stopped and that repatriation must begin, there we have lots of support.
Yeah, people perhaps doesn't confess to National Socialism, but I know that there are a lot of people like what we do regarding the actions for Tommy Lind and Anna-Lena Lernhede when it comes to this issue that we have in common. So and also 10 years ago when you were on the streets handing out leaflets, stuff like that, you had people shouting at you, spit towards you, perhaps trying to beat you. It was quite common, so it was a lot of fights. We were forced to defend ourselves, but today it's more discussions. People like that we are there. It's a thumbs up. And so it's a change of scenery in Sweden, I think.
Yeah, I have said it before in Leadership Perspective, I think, and I will most certainly say it again. But as you say, no matter what city we have a public activity in, where we are standing on the streets and squares, handing out our material, discussing with people, we always get more cheers than boos. We always have more supporters than haters. It is like that. How comes that we are not in power then? Yeah, people are brainwashed. They are afraid. They are afraid to get socially stigmatized by being called racists or whatever. And many people are also very demoralized. They support us, but they believe that things cannot be changed anyway. So therefore, they do not pick up the sword and fight. But of course, there our task is to give them courage and to give them hope. So that's perhaps our most important part of the struggle, to succeed with this. Not necessarily tell them that immigration is wrong, because they know that, but to give them courage and hope to dare to stand up and fight alongside with us.
Yeah, it's a big difference between thinking right and acting.
Mm, absolutely.
So some of our listeners may be living in countries that are still fairly ethnically homogeneous, and where a mass immigration is not a major problem. You mentioned Iceland, for example, and there's a lot of other countries. Is this question then relevant to them? And if so, why or why not?
I would say it's most certainly relevant. I mean, if the Swedes in the 80s would have seen Sweden of today, I can guarantee you they would have fought against immigration. I'm 100% sure. They wouldn't have wasted their votes on open border socialists and open border capitalists. They wouldn't have wasted their lives not caring at all. So I believe that you must use us and other countries as warning examples. You must make the people see what will come if you don't stand your guard. The rulers of the world, they have a clear goal. They want to eradicate the white race. And they will not settle until we are all dead, or at least slaves under their control. And just because you live in an ethnically homogeneous place for now, does not mean that they have forgotten about you or do not care about you. Mark my words when I say it's not a question about if, but when also your borders will be open for fortune hunters from the other side of the world, with capitalists and communists joining hands and cheering, and the self-proclaimed elite rubbing their hands. And do not trust your democratic politicians. It might seem like they right now gets all of this, if you live in, for example, Poland or Hungary. Yeah, right, now they seem to care. But when you look the other way around, they will go to the happy merchant and get their pockets filled. They're not driven by what is best for you and the nation, but out of what is best for their careers and their personal bank accounts. And right now, it is best for them to be anti-immigration. So, no matter how things are right now, I definitely believe that you need to get organized. You need to start building the ground for a revolutionary movement. You need to talk about the dangers of immigration. And you need to build the ground so that when the problems for real come in the future, you can take care of them for real. And you can take care of your people for real, not for egocentric purposes like today's politicians.
A lot of international supporters of the Nordic resistance movement are in touch with us and want to move here. Of course, this is something we are very happy about, but unfortunately it is difficult to help with the current conditions. How do we look at immigration? And yes, both from racial comrades around the world and racial strangers after we have taken power.
Yeah, to beginning, as you say, sadly enough, we do not have the resources to help find living quarters and works and so on for everyone that would like to come here. And trust me, there are mails every week with people that want to move here and join us. At least that is the situation now. Hopefully it will change in the future. And also I would like to say that if you move here on your own, then you, of course, are more than happy to apply for membership when you're here. We have actually members of several different countries in our organization today. And in the future then, after the great victory, after the big repatriation, what will happen then? I think I will read another quote from our path that will possibly give the best answer. And then I read. Future immigration policy of the Nordic nation. Once mass immigration has been stopped and the repatriation process is completed, we would be able to cautiously reopen the borders of the Nordic nation. At this time, a controlled immigration could be allowed for closely related ethnic groups. The free Nordic nation could also grant asylum to racial kinsmen from around the world who have been persecuted due to their race or their political affiliation. End quote. I think that answers the question quite good.
Yeah. The Nordic countries are basically ethnically homogeneous. And therefore, they should, of course, continue to be so. So it becomes 100% logical and natural to be against mass immigration here. However, there are other countries where the situation is more unclear. US, for example. What do you think here? What should our American sympathizers fight for regarding this issue?
I cannot decide what path the Americans should take. Realistically, I believe there are only two paths available. Either give up America, move back to Europe, or fight for ethnically homogeneous states that break free from the rest of USA. And if you do so today, if you break free today or tomorrow, and without anyone else rising, you would not be allowed to keep that state without being bombed to hell. But in a future where we in the Nordic resistance movement and other national socialists have gained control over our nations, it could be possible to do so. And then, of course, the fight for that free state needs to be started now already. However, on the other side, we also need you guys in the struggle for Europe. We need every strong man and woman we could get. So, in the end, this is a choice you need to do on your own. However, I do not think there are other realistic possibilities than those two, at not as it looks now and probably for a long time forward. And this same thesis could be applied to South Africa, Brazil, or whatever nation around the world where you share your home with a huge amount of racial strangers that, yeah, have about the same right as you to be in that country. So either fight to separate yourself or move here and fight alongside with us.
And what to do if you agree with all this, if you want to preserve the white race and stop mass immigration to the white countries?
Yeah, I will use my classical short answer. Join or at least support your local National Socialist organization. And if there are no ones serious available where you live, then create one and keep in contact with us. Or support us in the Nordic resistance movement. The important thing is that you do something, that you do what you can. Nothing else is more important than our race survival, and it's your goddamn duty as parts of the almighty white race to fight. So, join the fight, comrades.
Very good. And then we end this episode, and like we said before, we will be back the 2nd of September. So, you have to listen to the other episodes.
And Landsman.
And Landsman, yes. And you were talking about a Norwegian podcast, Hold Fan and Hoyt. We also have a Danish podcast coming out this month. So if you want to listen to Norwegian or Danish, you should listen.
Yes, and in English, of course, Aristogenesis and the one and only Nordic Frontier.
Yes, yes. So, you can send questions and suggestions on topics for future episode of Leadership Perspective to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. And you can read more about us on our webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. Bye.
Take care, everyone, and have a great summer with a lot of fight for our race. Bye.